Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The stories that matter, says Roger, and the ones that don't either. 312-981-7200. Call in, text in. Join the conversation with us here on this Sunday morning. John Hansen here in for Dave Plyer till 5 a.m. And really quickly, we were talking about that last headline, finish the headline game of a man catching his wife cheating on him. And it actually happened 4 years. The cheating had been going on for 4 years. And he found evidence from 4 years in the past about how his wife was cheating on him. And it was done in a very 21st century way. Those are your clues so far. I'll give you one more clue as we welcome in Blake Stubbs here to WGN. Blake, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, John. How about yourself?
Good. I'm going to have you try and guess. I don't know if you've been paying attention here. I know you're getting ready for the segment. But, yeah, so a man caught his wife cheating. This happened in Peru. This man himself was planning out his day. I'll say that. He was planning out his day, and he found in a very 21st century way that his wife had been cheating on him for 4 years. Photographic evidence of his wife cheating on him. And how did he stumble upon that? Do you have any guesses, Blake?
I'm going to say that it's something to do with a cell phone.
Okay.
I can't go any deeper than that. I mean,
no, he wasn't digging through old photos or anything, and it wasn't.
Okay.
It could be on. He could have found this on a cell phone. He could have found it on his desktop computer. There's a few different ways he could have found this. He was
okay.
He was about to go to a store he had never been to before. So he's like, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to look at this thing.
Victoria's Secrets.
Internet search history.
No, not internet search history. What did you say, Interpol, Roger?
No, Victoria's Secrets.
Oh, Victoria's Secrets. No, no.
Maybe
no,
buying
oh,
her
like
something?
That was the, no, it wasn't that. It was photographic evidence he saw on his computer.
Is it in the cloud?
It is not in the cloud, no. So it's nothing that she had uploaded or anything along those lines. He had stumbled upon it. Some might even say this is a very Big Brother way of finding someone
security
cheating on you.
Security camera footage?
You're getting closer.
Oh, is it like a Google Maps?
Yes,
like
Google Maps. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
This guy was going to go to a place he hadn't been to before in town, and he just wanted to kind of look out his route. I don't know if you guys do that. I'll do that when I'm going to a new place. I'll enter the address. I'll see what the route is, and then I'll kind of be like, I want to see what this building looks like so I can see it when I know what it is when I get there. So you drop yourself on the little map, and it gives you the view. If you've never done this before, it's really Big Brother-y, and you spin around and you look, you can just see what it looks like from the street. Well, there in the street, off the street,
a window?
No, on a bench was a man laying down on the bench, and on the end of the bench was a woman, and the man was laying in her lap, just tenderly in there, and she was touching his face in one photo and kissing him in another. The photos were back to 2013, so this guy has been going on for 5 years. He confronted his wife. The affair was still going on, and he had to find out via Google Street View. So, there's a lesson for you. So if you're a crazy, jealous person, just pin yourself on the street and just like walk around your town and just scour around and see if you that might be the craziest thing ever to do. But if you have your suspicions, that's one way to find out, I guess. I mean, just think of the chances. They had to have that Google car. Have you seen that thing driving around? It's pretty funny when you see it. Give it a good wave.
Oh, yeah.
You're on candid camera. And and even it's interesting because her face, they try to blur out faces when they can. And she has a very distinctive hairstyle. I'm looking at the photos now. So he knew for sure it was her and clothing that he had bought her and all this stuff. And as just one more little jab, the bench where his wife and lover were sat was right by a street called Puente de los Suspiros, which translates to the Bridge of Sighs. So there you go.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rough, man. Bad.
So let's all do that now. Everyone on three. Everyone's going to sigh. Ready? One, two, three.
All right, let's talk about, well, Blake, we always come here on to talk about movies, all sorts of things. You were on with me on with John Williams Friday afternoon. We talked a little Greta. We even talked about how this is kind of a lull in the movie in industry. Did you get a chance to go out and see the movies this weekend, or was this an off weekend for you and going to the films?
Bit of an off week. Well, you ever had one of those weekends where you thought you had it planned out, and then it just takes a complete left turn, and you got to reorganize it?
Every time WGN calls me, yes.
That was not the only reason,
right,
that I didn't see Greta today or yesterday, but I will probably be seeing it this afternoon.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll get a chance to give you some thoughts. It's got some acting talent in the movie, Isabelle Huppert as well as Chloe Grace Moretz. I'm a big fan of both of them, so I'm hoping that it's good. I'm hearing some decent things, so we'll see.
And next weekend they got a big release too coming out, right?
Yes, we do. And in fact, we actually kind of teased talking a little bit about that movie. It's going to be Captain Marvel, the 21st. That's right, the 21st film released in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the first to have a female lead. And that is Brie Larson, who won Best Actress for Room a couple of years back. So I'm anticipating this movie. I was hoping they'd cast her in this role when they announced they were making the movie. Once they did, I mean, not only did I feel like a huge nerd and happy and excited that I guessed correctly, but also she's an excellent actress, fantastic talent. And I think that the visuals that I've seen in the trailer for this movie, I think audiences are going to be in for a treat.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that's going to be kind of a kickoff, a precursor, I think, to the real big blockbuster season that is lined up for this year.
Yeah, and so. Is it usually a lull after the awards season? That used to be, I think, a more... I guess the question I'm asking is, you know how like there used to be a real set calendar for when certain movies would come out, that you'd have your blockbusters in the summer, you'd have your award-winning potentials maybe late in the fall or nearer to where awards are announced or voted upon. Does it still follow that formula, or is that breaking down a little bit?
It breaks down a little bit only because of the volume of content that the likes of Disney are putting out. For example, you know, they have a Star Wars film coming out this year. There's an Avengers film coming out this year. You have Captain Marvel coming out this year, amongst other things. So, I mean, there's a whole, they have to spread it out so that they don't over-compete with each other. For example, like Captain Marvel, you know, will debut here on March 8th. That's the debut date, but it'll probably come out the Thursday before the Friday. That's usually how it works nowadays because they don't do midnight screenings as often anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so what you're probably going to end up seeing is Captain Marvel will have a long theatrical run. The exact date escapes me on Avengers Endgame, but Captain Marvel will probably still be in theaters when Endgame debuts. And they want to make sure that there's enough spread time between them so that Captain Marvel can have its run. And then they go back, and she will be appearing in Endgame so that, you know, by the time you've had ample time to see it, have a complete introduction to this character, hear her story, see her story, and then, you know, and so they're trying to make sure that when they lay out their calendar, Disney's kind of one of the big outliers of that old system, you know, that whole thing where you'd have the award season would come to an end, and then you'd see some things get released because they're not trying to compete with blockbusters. For example, if I remember correctly, Get Out, which won an Oscar for original screenplay. Jordan Peele won, and he also directed that film. That was released very early in the year, but well before the blockbusters were dropped.
Mm-hmm.
So it was able to find its audience without having to compete with things that were going to, you know, basically take all the money away from it. And they managed to get it out shortly after the Oscar season, but right before the big blockbuster season kicked off.
Interesting.
So, and the exact date escapes me, but yeah, there is still a little bit of a window there. It's just Disney has these, they're kind of bucking the system, so to speak, because of their calendar. It has more to do with what they're trying to release than, mm-hmm. you know, a big trend, I think, in the industry.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. Blake, I wanted to tee this up, and we'll continue talking about it more after the break, but I've been, you know, this cold weather that we're getting, this extra spell of winter into the meteorological part of spring, has me on the verge of tears. So I thought it'd be a really good thing to talk with you about. You know, movies evoke so many emotions, and we talk about comedies around the holidays. We talk about best holiday movies, but every now and then you need a good cry, and You know, film, like no other medium, I think, really has... They really know. A great filmmaker knows how to evoke that emotion from people. So I was hoping that you we could chat through some of the best movies that make you cry, Blake. I know you're not one above shedding a tear or two.
You know what? I was explaining this to someone today. You know, as a person who watches a lot of movies, when I was younger, didn't really cry during movies. I devoured them. You know, I watched them for how they were put together technically, and I tried to learn everything I can, and that's formulated a lot of my opinions of how I take films in. Since I've hit my 30s, man, I have not had a problem emotionally connecting with films.
Right.
And if it's good, I will cry. So, yeah, I don't have a problem admitting that I've shed some tears when I've been at the theater or, you know, when I've watched something at home. I don't have a problem admitting that. I think it's good to connect and feel and, experience the art in a way outside of just looking at it from like a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, those performances, if they're that good, they should make you feel something.
And I see a good movie that makes me cry, usually what does it for me is obviously the acting, the storyline, all that stuff. But man, those composers really know how to do it. I mean, that's always what gets you. Like, and I always wonder, you know, if some of the music wasn't, this is where they earn their big bucks. You know, if you take some scenes and you take that music out of that scene, it still may evoke some emotion, but that, I think what the score does and a great composer does, it kind of, you know, like maybe the actors and the setting and the script get you to the 20-yard line, get you in the red zone, but that score is what pushes you into the end zone and full-on ugly crying.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want a few names, you know, of scores you can find and listen to, I always tell people look into the works of Jerry Goldsmith. I always tell them look into Hans Zimmer, who I'm sure more people out there have listened to than almost any other composer, except for probably John Williams,
right,
who I would also put on that short list. There have been a lot of great composers who have put music behind things that just, if you have a great performance in a movie, that's one thing. But if you're able to amplify it through, you know, the music kind of guiding you through how your emotions are unfolding while you're watching it, oh, man, yeah, waterworks are going to kick in.
All right,
there's no question.
Absolutely. So 312-981-7200. You can text on in, but we love phone calls as well, joining the conversation. I want Roger to think real deep.
I've got my list
crank
already.
Crank up that keychain light, Roger, for some really good ideas.
This one I had no problems with. I put, without even having to double check, I had about 10 on my list already.
All right, well, you hold them, Curtis. All you got right. Some on the list as well. We're going to take a quick commercial break and then more with Blake Stubbs and everyone else here on 720 WGN.
Hey, Dad? You want to have a catch?
Oh, the waterworks! Feel the dreams! Blake Stubbs, are you crying? I don't know if that one did it for you, but the swelling music. Nice job, Curtis, getting that clip. I appreciate that. Go ahead, Blake.
I was actually going to point out that, you know, I think it's easier to talk about these things now as an adult male, but there was a point where the only movies that males in my life were ever willing to admit they cried at were sports movies.
Mm-hmm.
Field of Dreams was, like, definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Rudy is another one.
Rudy!
Yeah, that's a big one. Brian's Song, that's probably the one. I think my dad even admitted he cried to that one.
So, yeah, like, Carl, you know, was talking
and
about that.
I didn't
that,
watch yeah. it with him. But yeah, no, that's Lisa, one of those things where sports movies, man, it's such a big kicker for dudes out there. And I don't think any guy out there can say they haven't at least, you know, shed a tear over something like Rudy or Field of Dreams. Absolutely.
847 just texted and just watched Fault in Our Stars, which I don't know, Blake. I don't know if you know that one. Fault.
I'm familiar with that one, yes.
And had a good cry. Another is Terms of Endearment, which I know, and I'm sure I've shed a tear or two over. But Fault in Our Stars, I'll have to watch that one. We appreciate the text. 312-981-7200. Oh, by the way, John Hansen here, in for Dave Plyer, till 5 in the morning. What movie do you watch that just gives you a good cry? Let us know. So, Roger, you mentioned you had a list of 10. Let's get a couple that'll get the waterworks going. Because, Roger, you're like me. You're an emotional guy. You wear your heart on your sleeve. And
extremely emotional.
You and I could probably have a good cry over some movies. What are some that get you going?
Well, I'm going back a ways to a musical.
Okay.
This is a Broadway musical made into a movie, Carousel.
Carousel.
At the end.
Carousel.
When he starts singing, when they all start singing, when you walk right?
Oh, I don't know Carousel.
You don't?
I'm sorry, Roger.
Okay. All right, so...
Don't cry, just because I don't know it.
So, the father, who's a barker, he has a child with this girl that he has not married yet, and he goes to heaven. And in heaven, he gets a second chance. He's always kind of a braggadocious kind of guy, and he gets a chance to go back and see the mother of his child and the girl who's now grown up and having troubles of her own fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very wild and everything. There's this beautiful ballet segment in the middle of this. And so, but at the end, she's at their school graduation and she is now making friends with the people, her classmates who were against her before. And he has to, now that he's made everything right, he now must go back to heaven. And there's a beautiful song at the end that all the kids are singing, the parents are singing, all the people are singing, and I'm blubbering.
You're almost blubbering now, Roger, talking about it.
I'm just like, there's not enough Kleenex in the world to keep me going here. The other one, To Sir With Love. At the end, they're at the party, the graduation, they hand him the gift, and they're all, and again, having been a teacher, I know this feeling, and see, I'm losing it already.
Oh, right. Do you need me to fill some time? Or?
No, I'm okay, but it's just, at the end, when he goes back to his room, I'm just, again, the floodgates have opened up.
Well, you mentioned being a teacher. For me, Dead Poets Society, and Blake, you and I have watched that one.
Yes.
That one, Leo, that was, Captain moment. Blake, that's got to be on your list somewhere.
Well, that is not...
I was definitely going to bring that one up. Robin Williams.
One of his greatest performances.
It is, and for all of his brilliance as a comedian, and he is one of the all-time greats in my book, when he went dramatic, he really knew how to make you care. And Dead Poets Society, that performance, the movie's a heartbreaking movie in a lot of ways. But the way his final, exit, it just tears me up.
Yeah.
Hey, and again, I've seen that movie I don't know how many times since I was, probably 14 years old. But now when I watch it, I see it a whole different way.
Yeah, and that one, they toy with you with that score, though, too, with the Irish, with the bagpipes and that sort of feel to it. It can really get you, kind of like Rudy does as well. Hey, we're going to have plenty of time for myself, Roger, and Blake to talk more about this, but let's get on the phone lines. Paige, what are some movies that make you cry?
Hi. So for me, I really can't even watch it again because it was that traumatic with The Passion of Christ.
Oh, yeah.
And, I went with my cousin the first time I saw it. It was horrible. I think it was like 20 minutes in, and she just like hit me. She's like, would you get a hold of yourself? And she's like, we have two more hours of this. I mean, it was that bad.
Yeah.
And very sad. And then another one for me definitely was Brian's Song. Yeah. I mean, I just couldn't get past that. I just like, why did he have to die? It was just so sad. And then recently, A Star Is Born, the remake with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, that really, really, movie was so touching, and it just was so sad.
So, Paige, even in a crowded theater, you have no problems letting the waterworks go.
Well, it's kind of hard not to sometimes. It's very hard. I mean, especially, like going with someone about The Star Is Born. I mean, I got to tell you, for me, that movie was the first movie in a very long time where I was watching it as though I was in love with the characters. Like, it wasn't Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. It literally was those two. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Where I was almost like, I'd love to go see his concert, like Jackson or whatever
his name was in there. You really got lost in it.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I mean, I and that to me is a sign of a good movie when you can forget that they're acting, And it's, you're just in love with them as, you know, their character. It was just absolutely amazing, but very sad.
Yeah, Paige, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. Blake.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, Paige, and thanks for listening. And Blake, I think she hit it on the head. I think that we only really cry in the movies where we do get lost in them.
Yes, and sometimes, you know, as an audience member, and again, I want to echo her sentiments about Bradley Cooper's performance, so, and Lady Gaga as well, but Cooper was kind of ignored during the awards season. You know, he co-wrote, he directed, he produced, and he starred in this movie, and it was probably one of my favorite performances of the year. Unfortunately, trophies didn't come along with it, but, you know, Bradley, if you're out there listening, man, you killed it. Bring more of that. I want more of that. Audiences want more of that. And I think that when the characters are that fleshed out, when they're that well-performed, when you experience their arc in full, as you do with his character in that film, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it can make you feel as an audience member. There's another film similar to that that I don't want to say it's forgotten. It is very well received critically, and anyone I know who's ever seen it really liked it. It was called 50-50, and it starred Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah,
oh, yes, I
Seth
remember.
Rogen, Angelica Houston, Anna Kendrick. It's a star-studded cast, but it's about a young man who, at like 28, 27 years old, which was, I was younger than that when it came out, he is diagnosed with cancer, an aggressive form of cancer that is like, it's in his back. And the surgery that they are going to perform on him has a 50-50 chance of killing him. And it's a choice. It's a choice. Like, are you going to go through with it or not? And there was a scene, I saw that with a whole group of friends. And there is a particular scene in the movie right before he goes into surgery where he is trying to talk to his mother and his father, who is inflicted, I believe, with Alzheimer's. And he just starts crying and like pulls her in and is hugging her and talking about how scared he is. And for me personally, and this is where, you know, sometimes the water works, they just come, as I believe Paige just said, I completely lost it. I was a sick kid when I was younger. I went through 4 sinus surgeries. The first one, I think I was only like 9 years old, 10 years old, and I didn't know what the heck was happening. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'd been sick, I'd been in hospitals, but I had never like voluntarily gone under anesthesia at the time, and I was scared. I cried. I hugged my mom, my dad. I didn't know, and it was just like seeing that depicted in a film. Now, granted, it was for it was a different condition entirely. But I
for a 9-year old though,
yeah, I related to it so well, and of course, it was, you know, 15 plus years removed from that, but I just I remember just sitting there like crying my eyes out, and all these people I was with, dear friends of mine, all theater folks, because I worked in theater when this movie came out, you know, who are criers. They know how to cry, man. They're right. Looking at me like, are you okay, dude?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm totally fine. I am fine. This is great.
Yeah,
and honestly, I love the film for that reason.
You know, it's interesting. You're right. I think we each cry at different things, of course, and the ones that really get you going kind of uncontrollably, maybe you have some relation to it. It's so amazing you mentioned 50-50, Blake. Not only had I forgotten about that movie, but it is actually the first movie I ever saw by myself in an empty theater. I was the only one seeing it. I saw it like on a Monday afternoon. I had a random day off. I was in Champaign, actually, and I just went and I was like, I'll go see this movie. It's a Get Good Truth. And I remember bawling in it and looking around being like, well, thank God I'm the only one in this theater so no one else can see it, although I'm sure everyone else would have been too. A few quick texts. We're going to continue this conversation after the news. 309 says Steel Magnolias gets going, which is always true. Paige mentioned A Star Is Born, a recent movie. Another one, Bohemian Rhapsody, when Freddie has to tell the news of his diagnosis. It's a Wonderful Life from the 708. Old Yeller from the 708 as well. Tell you what we're going to do, Blake, you can stick around, right? You don't got to go anywhere, right?
Absolutely.
All right, you grab some tissues. I'm going to put you on hold for a second. We're going to take the world's shortest commercial break and then get the news here on 720 WGN.
It's like what we used to sing every morning when I was a boy at school. Maybe you still sing it. When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high.
You know that one?
And don't be afraid of the dark.
Believe him, darling. Believe.
Still doing okay, Roger? Roger's head is down. Are you okay, Rog? I think we've lost Roger. Roger, are you?
I loved you too.
Oh no, this is sad. You okay, Rog? Carousel, and Annette texted in too, the song is You'll Never Walk Alone. And Roger, thanks for playing that. Are you okay, buddy? Yeah, he's I get you. There's certain things that get you. Having not seen it, I couldn't visualize it, but
well, they're at the graduation, and the principal says about the song, and the students stand up and start singing, and he whispers again, he's a ghost, no one can see him. And so he kind of whispers to his daughter, who hasn't started to sing, and said, listen to the words, and she starts singing. Then he walks over to his wife and whispers in her ear, and it appears as though she can actually hear him. And she smiles, and it's Shirley Jones is the woman. And that's where you heard the higher voice start singing. And then he gets motioned over by one of the angels, and he has to go back to heaven.
Oh, Roger. That's 312-981-7200, movies to make you cry. Boy, I really hope it up the waterworks here. Blake, are you there? Can you talk right now? We're both crying here in the room. I'm only laughing not at you, Roger, at us.
You saw me as soon as I hear the first note. Of the song, it gets me every time. It just rips at my heart. It's one of the
I was just going to add to this conversation because Roger's also talking about a work that really built its life on the stage.
Yes.
And as a person who's worked a lot of backstage and technical directed over 18 shows and things like that, part of my professional life outside of talking about movies on the radio and making commercials for a living has been in the theater. When you get to see a show like Carousel and it's executed properly, and you're able to sit backstage and watch the audience because you've already watched the actors do their thing through rehearsal and everything. When you see people crying in the audience live to stuff like that, you know you've hit it on the head. And this song is one that I've seen live actually just tear an audience apart. So Roger's not alone.
Yeah.
John, don't feel bad because you just got brought into the club on this.
Now I'm like, I don't know.
See this live because it can really get you really big time. I think I would argue in some cases even more than a film can.
Yeah.
Depending on
the production, exactly. Hey, a few texts we got, 815, I cried when Bambi's mother was killed. We don't have to say spoiler alert on that, right? That one's pretty well out there.
No,
that's been. If you haven't seen Bambi yet, sorry to ruin it for you. But I cry when I see John Bonham plays the drums and the song remains the same. I'm not familiar with that one, Carrie. Do you know that one, Blake? The song remains the same. Have you heard of that?
John Bonham playing the drums?
Yeah.
No, it's music. Music and, the song. I haven't listened to that.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a song. Okay. Oh, I thought it was a movie.
It's Led Zeppelin. I mean, yes, it's John Bonham from Led Zeppelin. But if you watch a live performance of it,
which
has been filmed, sometimes musicians and artists can evoke ever so much. I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit with A Star Is Born. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of concert-style footage. The final number that Lady Gaga sings in that, if you haven't already cried in the movie,
yeah.
when you are while watching that movie, you will when you watch her sing. I believe it's called I Will Never Love Again.
708
so,
says,
I mean, they, yeah. yeah.
708 has the,
good
the,
pick.
The big big chill. And
big chill.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's a good one. 708 also says a couple different ones. Gran Torino at Eastwood's funeral. And St. Vincent, when Bill Murray goes on, says present-day saint.
Oh, have you not seen that movie?
I have not seen that
movie. Oh, my goodness. He should have been nominated, seriously, for Best Actor Award in that. I'm not kidding. I found that on Prime last year, and I had heard little talk about it, and I just wanted to see what it was about. I was grabbed, and I was pulled in, and I could not leave that movie. Seriously, Bill Murray should have been nominated.
Blake, did you see it?
There was a lot of talk that he might have been when that film was originally released. Remember how earlier I mentioned sometimes movies get released and then you kind of have to, mm-hmm. you know, throw it up to the wind about whether the award season's going to remember it or not? St. Vincent was one of those movies that, you know, the winds of award season just didn't really give the due that performance. So I'm with Roger on that one. Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Julie. Julie, you got a top three movies that make you cry, right?
Well, I got a lot of them, but I'll give you three. Patch Adams.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's one of Robin's best, too.
Mm-hmm.
Funny Girl.
Oh, yeah.
And The Green Mile.
Oh, that's, yeah, we had a couple of texts, and Blake,
oh, I'm sorry. How about The Way We Were and Bambi and Message in a Bottle? Let's
We hadn't brought up The Green Mile yet, Julie. You didn't do anything wrong. Blake, I think you told me before we went on air that that's one of yours, right?
It is. It absolutely is. I think a lot of it has to do with that ensemble being so effective.
Yeah.
And the movie, it's one of those rare movies that it is long. Like, its running time is kind of long. However, it's a worthy endeavor to sit down and watch it from beginning to end and really care about what's going on in that movie. Every performance in that movie is stellar.
Julie,
and I think that's a big reason why.
Julie, do you like seeing movies that make you cry? Are you okay with it? Does it help?
I'm okay because I cry easy.
Yeah.
And you said the music really does a lot.
Yeah. Do you cry at commercials sometimes? Because every now and then I find myself doing that. Or back when
happy tears and sad tears.
Yes. When Oprah used to still be on, my mom watched Oprah. I couldn't get through an Oprah show without crying because she'd always have some inspiring story and she'd have a big surprise. I can't do it. Or when Ellen has a big surprise. Happy stuff often makes me cry more than the sad stuff does. It's more like the inspiring stories. Hey, Julie, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for listening.
Okay, take care.
Yeah, anytime, call on in. We're going to take a quick commercial break. But boy, this is going to... Any more criers that you got, folks, or if you want to hear the clip, 312-981-7200, we'll try and just play them one at a time this time. Quick commercial break here on 720 WGN.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson. You hear me? Sit down. Sit down. This is your final warning, Anderson. How dare you? You hear me?
Oh, Captain, my captain.
Mr. Overstreet, I warn you. Sit down. Sit down, all of you. I want you seated. Sit down. Leave, Mr. Keating. All of you, down. I want you seated. Do you hear me? We'll be right back.
Oh, my God, Blake, what are we doing?
I'm going to need a minute.
Oh, and you know what? That movie was, it's a great movie. It's sad. That moment is so picturesque in many ways. But, oh, it's so much even worse watching it now with Robin gone.
That's true. And I don't want to derail our conversation because I have a Robin Williams movie to follow up in after that clip. Yeah. Maurice Jarre, I might mispronounce his name, but Maurice Jarre did the music for that film. So it is not one of the big names that you probably recognize making, you know, music for films today. This man passed away in 2009. But just to throw a few other films at you, he composed all the music for Ghost, Witness with Harrison Ford, Dr. Zhivago, and Lawrence of Arabia. This man knew how to compose music for films. He was excellent at it. And I think the performances in Dead Poets, coupled with the music, as we've mentioned multiple times tonight, it's a home run. And the other film I want to piggyback the conversation just so we can throw more adoration toward Robin Williams and his excellent performances is the film he did win his Oscar for, which is Good Will Hunting.
Mm.
I think there's a little less in the music. It's more in the acting. Not that the music's bad in the film.
It's understated. They don't swell it.
Correct. And it's one of those where raw acting performances with an excellent script, which also won an Oscar, written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. I got to be honest with you, man. This guy, when he turned it on and he wasn't doing just strictly comedy, he could make you laugh and he could break your heart in the same film. And he did in just about every film that he went for a dramatic role in. He couldn't just do solid drama. You know, that wasn't the only thing he was there for. And directors knew how to work with him, and they let him work. That was the other thing. Typically, he wasn't the type of actor who followed a word-for-word script. He did on some productions, but he was always given freedom because there was just an electricity with him. It was something that couldn't be denied. And I think mentioning, you know, if we're talking tearjerkers, I find there are fewer actors that have ever pushed me over the edge to cry or feel something than Robin Williams. So, yeah, you're right, John. It's harder now that he's gone.
Yeah, it is. That movie, and not to keep on harping on Dead Poets Society, there's better movies out there that Robin Williams has done, and it's, you know, there's parts of Dead Poets Society where it's a little, I don't want to say contrived, but they're clearly trying to evoke emotion. And sometimes I don't like when it's so obvious and it's so, but man, sure. I watched that movie. I know it came out in the late 80s, early 90s. I don't know exactly when, but I didn't really watch it a few times till I was in college, and that, you know, you're at that same age of carpe diem, seize the day, and, you know, when you're 21, 20 years old, you think anything is possible, and, you know, we were young lads in college having a good time and thinking we were on to big and better. Oh, just that whole storyline just gets me. We have an interesting, just a lot of text coming in. Bette Midler, Wind Beneath My Wings, the song, I think it's at, we have a two-part text. One is Homeward Bound, watching the dog making his way back home.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes. Schindler's List, 405 text is in, obviously, and that has, that movie you watch, and it's so powerful because you know how real it was, of course. That plays, obviously, a huge role in that. 630 says two scenes in Tarzan the musical, emotional enough to make one cry if it's done right. When Tarzan decides to leave his family and sings with his mother, that's sad as well. Out of Africa, sob. The Departed, spoiler alert, Leo gets killed. The end of Ghost. A lot of It's a Wonderful Life for Harry's toast the end.
Yeah, can go I ahead. A few more? Yeah, all right, yeah, so yeah. Final home run in The Natural.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Hitting
yeah.
the lights.
With the lights, the whole thing. Yeah, yeah. That's a big cinematic moment, I think. That was one that my grandmother pointed out to me at a young age. She was like, oh, you got to watch The Natural.
Yeah.
And then finally I watched it with her, and I will always credit her. She's no longer with us, but I will always credit her for being one of the reasons I love film as much as I do.
Really?
And The Natural was one of the movies that she pointed me toward. And, of course, she was one who... And later in life, she was unable to see, actually. She had macular degeneration that took a vast majority of her sight. And she could sit and hear quite fine and watch. She was basically, you know, in a bed for the last couple of years of her life. And she could hear any movie that she had seen in her life. And she could tell you who the actor was. She could tell you what the movie was. And more often than not, she'd probably tell you who directed it. So I feel like I get a lot of that trait from her. And I know that, you know, if one day my sight goes, I still want to be able to adore cinema the way she did. And John, you and I have had a conversation with someone who has enjoyed cinema as much, if not more than us, who didn't have sight once before on the radio here at WGN.
Fascinating
process, you know, that they're able to describe so much. A person who can't see watching cinema, it blows me away. I honestly, after we had that conversation, there were some emotions there, because I realized that was something my grandma shared with the person who we had that conversation with. And it was like, how do you still enjoy it if you can't see it? Well, you can, wholeheartedly. And my grandma did. She could tell you every scene in the movie Giant, which was something that was mentioned in one of my latest appearances here on the station. It's an epic film. And she knew it almost frame by frame, even though she couldn't see it later in life.
We talk about movies making you cry at the end, but some get you right at the beginning. I saw on your list, Blake, Up. Ugh.
Yes. That is a big one.
The whole opening sequence.
Why right out the gate? Come on, we're supposed to have fun off the start of a movie, you know?
Especially
people
a cartoon.
Running around and having fun.
Especially a Disney movie.
Yeah. Come on, they're chasing each other. It should be fun. Quick action off the bat. Fall in love with the guy.
How about the...
That definitely is a real deep love story told in a very short span of time. And I think audiences can find it so easily relatable, be it through their grandparents, through their own love story. It's just, it's so weird how something in such a short span of time can still be so epic in its nature. I don't want to overuse that word tonight, but I think that's a big reason why people connect with it so well.
Right. There's many parts of this movie that you cry during the movie, but when in the balcony everyone stands up to kill a mockingbird.
I love To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know,
absolutely.
Roger, you mentioned the standing up.
It's a heart-wrenching story.
Yeah. You mentioned the standing up and you mentioned the swelling of music. I think sometimes what movies get you are these epic moments where there's chanting all together, like, oh, Captain, my Captain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's these moments of everyone in together in unison doing something, whether it's Rudy. Those can really get you. You almost are like you're in that room with
that
them.
That, for me, is Miracle on Ice.
Oh yeah!
Which happened about actually almost 40 years ago. I think just over 40 years ago.
Mm. That was 1980, wasn't it? So yeah,
it's 39, 40 years ago.
Yeah,
that one for me always gets me choked up. Another Disney one, Toy Story 3.
Ah, yeah, that's on Blake's list.
Very
I know
end
that.
When they're about to be incinerated. Another one that hasn't been mentioned: A Dog's Purpose.
I don't know that one.
Have you seen that one, Blake?
Came out last year, didn't it?
That's not very old, right?
It's recent. 2015 or 2017, something like that.
Yeah, last year.
Okay.
Was that the one where they had concerns over how they forced the dogs to...
Oh, right.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Maybe.
I think that's the one, yeah.
I don't remember, but I know the story itself is very kind of heartbreaking, because it's a dog who goes through, basically it's narrated through from his perspective, and he goes through different lives with different dogs. But he starts out with a boy named Ethan, and then he comes back to the boy after he's all grown up, and he kind of at that point realizes what his purpose in life is after going through all these different lives as different dogs throughout the 50 years or so.
E.T. gets me sometimes.
Oh
yeah. No, E.T., what a magical film E.T. is.
Yeah.
If you think about it. I mean, it came out in 1982. It's one of Spielberg's, you know, big ones, as far as formative ones that I saw at a young age and will never forget. But you know why E.T., I think, just absolutely slays the audience when they watch it? Henry Thomas's performance in that film as Elliot. And it's not just the puppeteering or anything like that. It's all great. That's all excellent. That young man's performance is so, I think, genuine for a child actor that anybody can watch it and connect. And there's you can look this up on YouTube. If you're listening, check it out as soon as we're, you know, done here. Watch his audition. That you can watch Henry Thomas's audition for Elliot in E.T. and it will break your heart. Ugh. And it was just the audition. And I want to spoil one thing. The end of the clip, you don't see him at all on camera, but the end of the clip is Steven Spielberg telling him, well, kid, you got the job.
Oh, really?
It's one of the most Hollywood things I've ever seen, but not in a cheesy way.
Send me a link
to that.
Just
like a kid's dream completely comes true. I'll get it to you.
All right.
Oh, I'll be ready with the clip. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
we can play.
ET's a big one.
You know what I just thought of? I know we got to take a quick break and go to news. But one that just gets me, got me, I think it's probably the first one that I can distinctly remember crying at as a kid, is My Girl.
Yes. Macaulay Culkin.
Yes.
And Anna Chlumsky, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis. Pretty big cast, if you think about it.
And
but a film that made me cry. Yep.
He had to, Macaulay Culkin goes into the forest to get the mood ring, but stung by the hornets and dies from the allergy. And then doesn't the girl, he's not wearing his glasses in the funeral, and she's worried that he can't see without them and stuff like that. I think I haven't seen that movie probably in 25 years. I think that's how it goes.
It is, and there's an interesting element where the young girl, she lost her mother at a very young age.
Yes.
And her family runs a funeral parlor. So death is not something that's foreign to her. However, his death is something that I think every person at some point in their life will lose someone as close as that relationship was. And the whole movie, you get to see that relationship. So it is. It's a real tearjerker moment at the end of the movie. In fact, I haven't watched that movie in probably 10 years. I bet if I watched it now, I would be a blubbering mess.
Yeah.
By the end of it. And I don't have a problem admitting it. I really don't.
I kid you not. I don't think I've seen that movie in 25, 30 years. The last thing I'll note about The Green Mile, we mentioned that one in The Crying. That's also one of those movies that has a scene in it that is so horrific and scary that I cannot watch that movie. I can't even remember the scene, but I know there's a scary, really frightening scene. I'll have to look it up exactly what it is. I meant to mention it earlier when I think it was Julie called in and mentioned that movie. But there's certain movies that there's something I will not watch. Scary, frightening, disturbing, that I just have to skip through or just won't even watch the movie knowing that is lurking there. That's an odd way to end the segment, but that's where we're going to end that one.
I'll throw one more in before you throw it to the news. Yep. Are you going to a break or the news?
We have a 20-second. We have a really short commercial.
All right.
So you go ahead, Roger.
At the end of the movie, I know this was a Broadway play, but again, another musical. Barbara Streisand walking out of the class building singing On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever.
Mm.
Just her powerful voice, what she has gone through in the movie. This is where she has lived several lives, and this professor has hypnotized her and is living through her different lives and is falling in love with her, actually with her past lives. And he can hypnotize people and make them, stop smoking and whatever. And she starts falling in love with him, and he's falling in love with her. And then she finally is cured and is able to walk away and sings, as only Barbara Streisand can, On a Clear Day. And the music and the graphics, the imagery with the cinematography is just heartrending.
I just thought of one more. I'm sorry. I know, Curtis. Curtis, we're in trouble. Blake, I don't know if this one gets you. This is probably one that got me the most in a really transformative part of my life. Finding Neverland with Johnny Depp and Kate Winslet, the story of J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan, and Kate Winslet can't attend the premiere of it, and he has it performed for her in her home. And
there he goes. There he goes, Blake.
And
there he goes.
That's a big one.
Go ahead.
You know, the film is well done, but it is now a stage production that you can see.
Oh, really?
And it is also. I have several friends. I have not yet had a chance to see it. It just came through Peoria recently, and I missed it, and I'm kicking myself for it because I wanted to. But I've heard nothing but good things about that production. And also, I want to point out, I've heard nothing but good things about that production from people in multiple age groups.
Yeah,
like it was like a full gamut of because I think that's something to take into consideration when you recommend content to people. Like, oh, is this something you might like? I think this is a production that everyone could like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, John, I'm with you on that. That's a big one.
I pride myself on never being late for news. I'm as late as I've ever been. Blake, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it, okay?
Absolutely. You guys have a great night.
Grab the Kleenex. We have 20 seconds till the news.